My friend, there's another loss to the Los Angeles Kings for the Calgary Flames. We kind of saw it coming.
You can only do your best, and you know the rest is just up to the Kings. When the Kings show up, the Kings get the points, clearly. Holy.
Good on the... I'll preface everything with, good on the Kings. That's a real hard brand of hockey they play, and they're structured, they're hardworking, they stick with it.
Goalie was good for a guy that spent the bulk of the year in the A.
But, I mean, it's not like he stole that game. You don't come away saying Cal Peterson's the only reason the Kings won. If that were the case, I think you could be okay.
I feel like Dylan Dubé might not have slept well last night, but, you know, it wasn't like they didn't get chances, but tough to suggest the Flames had the better netminder last night. It's kind of been that way when they've lost.
Riddick was fine, but he wasn't
six
bad.
Games. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the problem that I have coming out of that is that the thing that the Flames, we talked about the Flames not doing, they did. They got outworked. They got outplayed. The Kings were the better team last night. The Kings fully deserved those 2 points. Now, it wasn't as horror awful as those two games in October, but it was still a game against the 30th place team in the NHL where they were the better team better part of 60 minutes.
It felt like a lot of San Jose and Nashville at home last week, didn't it?
Yep.
There were spells where they were good. There were spells where they were like worse than you think they should be able to be with their season on the line in theory. And in the end, they didn't really have an overwhelming push in the final 20. That, what was it, 63 seconds of 5-on-3 that they had?
62, yeah.
62 seconds of 5-on-3? Probably want that back, I'm guessing.
Yeah, not a lot of urgency
I'd love to
there.
Know, and I know that there's stats people that could figure this out. I would love to know how much 5-on-3 time on average equals a goal. So, we'll play some rough math around just so you can try to understand the concept, not you, the listeners. So let's say an average power play rolls at 25%. Not true. It's way higher, but just for argument's sake. Okay. That would mean for every 8 minutes or so on 5-on-4, you'd get a goal, right? Because you're successful once every 4 power plays. Power plays, you know, around 2 minutes long, not exactly 2, because if you score with time left, that falls off. But I'd love to know how many seconds of 5-on-3 time is when you're expected to score. Because I feel like 62 seconds wouldn't be far off. I feel like you're probably a coin toss of like whether you score or not around 45 seconds to a minute. Doesn't that feel like a 50-50? Is that too high for goals?
No, it sounds about right. I'm trying to think.
That really means anything today. It's a weird thought I had.
I mean, in that circumstance, when you're down by a goal.
Single goal at that point.
In a game that you really haven't played all that well in.
Here's your chance.
Here's an opportunity to
earn points.
Get points in a game where, okay, we haven't been great, but we're still better. Let's just figure out a way. And there just wasn't a whole lot of urgency there on the 5-on-3. And again, credit the Kings. That was a good... You know, Anze Kopitar is not necessarily the guy that he once was.
Still a good player.
But he's still a really good player. And that guy, they're 30th place, and that guy looks like he's playing for a playoff spot. Like, that guy was dialed in last night.
If you put those two teams in teal and pink jerseys and took off all the name bars, and you asked viewers last night which team was playing for their playoff positioning and which team was getting ready for the draft lottery.
Yep.
You probably would have thought the Kings were the more urgent team.
It would have been
team.
The opposite, for sure.
Looked urgent. That's the greatest indictment on this year's Calgary Flames. They never seem to look like they want it more than the other. I shouldn't say never. They more often are the team that you think isn't as invested as the other. Rather than being where they are in the standings, understanding that this whole season is based around avenging last year's disappointing spring, why can't you show a little more urgency? Were they awful last night? No. I mean, certainly there were some awful performances, and that blue line, I don't know how much longer that could keep going. Holy yuck. You got 3 top 4 guys, and you're running, at the beginning of the year, you're number 8 in the top 4 slot. It's not looking good. I'd rather see Oliver Shillington in top 4, and I know he's flawed. Michael Stone has been dreadful since Gio's absence. He sure can't seal the walls. Just don't look at the data. Holy.
Wow, he was that everybody really struggled on the blue line last night.
And that's the problem when you got three of your top six defensemen from when you started the year.
Exactly.
Valimaki, Giordano, and Hamonic.
And two of your top four, no questions asked.
Well, and
then if you have a bad game from Anderson and Hanifin, it's like, what else are you going to do? And they struggled last night.
And TJ's playing with a guy that's over his head in minutes, I'm convinced. Not that...
Oh, I'm with you. I don't...
The Flames coaching staff isn't there. Otherwise, they wouldn't be rolling him out top 4 minutes. But... And you know what? He keeps getting love from all the old guys that say he's big and he works hard. Don't know what that's worth.
That
kind of feels like Chris Russell 2.0.
That doesn't matter.
He's got the old guard defending him.
What other people say don't matter. It really doesn't. But I don't think he should be getting 21 minutes a night.
Absolutely not.
And I think that there are... But here's the problem.
Somebody's got to play those minutes, right? Somebody's got to be elevated to top four.
And they're not. It doesn't look like they're going to change anything tonight. Yellison out, Davidson in. I'd be curious... how you could maybe partition things a little bit more.
Well,
I'd feel more comfortable with Anderson, Hanifin, and Brody playing 22-plus, and then
the challenge
spreading
is,
it out.
What are you doing with the pairs, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, you can get creative. It's not.
You
it
can.
Wouldn't be crazy to
no,
run a
3-3
three and three split, right?
I agree, but I guess if I'm just going to go really basic on you, if you know who your best three defensemen are right now, and it's obvious, 55, 4, and 7, nobody else has played top four basically all year, until these injuries cropped up, or like a week back in November when Hamonic and Brody were out, who's the guy you're going to elevate into a theoretical, air quotes, top four role? And the answer from the Flames has been Stone. And it's weird because they've healthy scratched Stone more than they've played him for Oliver Shillington this year. And yet Stone's the guy they're elevating into top 4 minutes, not Shillington, even though Shillington has a common partner you could put him with. You could put him with Anderson, guys that have played together more than any other, you know, theoretical top four with one of these new guys or bottom guys thrown in.
I just don't think it's crazy. Like, I don't think you need to be cemented to three pairings in a situation like
this. I agree. It's just, like, I'm with you 100%. Get as creative as you need to get to keep whoever is the number four now,
like if you
way
have,
under the 21 minutes he played.
If you have Stone, Shillington, and Davidson tonight all around 15, and you have Hanifin, Anderson, and Brody all between 22 and 26, I feel a whole lot more comfortable with that than rolling out stock a pairing of Brody and Stone. Because Stone is struggling. Last night he really struggled at suppressing zone entries, at keeping up with the pace. He was hemmed in his own zone all night long.
It's just
and that's kind of what Stone is at this stage of his career. He's fine as a 5-6-7 if you need him. In the top four against fast, skilled players, even on a team like the LA Kings.
Second worst team in the league.
It really shows.
With the Flames, what, best defenseman at this point?
That's, like, if you were to...
I'm sorry, like...
And here's the thing. You've got a... And I... Look, I don't know how realistic this is, but you've got a guy in Brody who can play the left and the right.
Yeah.
I don't think it's crazy to think that you could be a little more creative to make sure that your best guys get the most time and the three guys you're not as comfortable with get a whole lot less. It's not perfect. It's not ideal, but I think it's better than rolling out Stone every night as a top four or rolling out Shillington or Davidson as a top four at this point. I don't think any one of those three should be getting top 4 minutes, even in an injury situation like this.
They're going to have to do something. And I thought that was tough for Yellison last night.
I thought he got better as the game went along.
Well,
I liked him better in the third than
I
did in the first.
Looked like he needed a new set of underpants at the end of the first. Like, holy, every time he touched the
first
puck.
First NHL game.
And a totally new partner. I mean, if you gave him Davidson, that would have helped him, I thought. And this notion that, like, you need a guy on the right or the left more than the other just is nonsense because TJ can play both.
Well, and
so
no
you
one
have,
else.
So here you have three guys that are good, right, that should be playing big minutes. Anderson's a righty, Hanifin's a lefty, and TJ Brody can go either way. So it doesn't matter whether there's a righty or a lefty that you can totally move those pieces around because of Brody. You can play him on the right with, let's say, a Shillington if you wanted, or with a Hanifin, so you could have Shillington, Rasmus Anderson together, or you can play him on the left, play him with a Stone, or theoretically, you know, I guess Anderson and leave Hanifin to play with someone else. It's just...
Well, the other thing is...
You could have given him a common defense partner,
both at least. Shillington and Davidson are comfortable playing the right side, too. Davidson's done it more.
Well, we haven't seen the NHL all from Shillington.
We
so I'm
haven't,
not,
but
I'm not
prior
it.
To coming over, that's all he's ever played was on the right side.
So 5 years ago?
In the Swedish league, yeah.
Exactly. So that, until we see it at the NHL, I'm not willing to say comfy.
All I'm saying is that it wouldn't be crazy if you were to put either one of those guys out there on the right side if you absolutely had
to. And you don't have to, yeah. And to be fair, like something a guy did as a 17-year-old 5 years ago in the sixth best league in the world, don't really know how that translates at all. I know what you're saying. It's a fact. It's fair. I just don't know that means anything at this level.
I'm not saying it does, but I don't think it would be crazy if they were to give it a go one night if they had to. Like, what happens if they suffer another injury here? Like, the blue line depth is already in a spot where you're like, I don't know. That was
trade for Petrie 2 days ago, like we told you. Go do it.
I don't like that either.
you'd have a top four defenseman, and you'd have a problem solved for next year on the right side.
He's also 34 years old.
So you only got him for one more year. He's fine right now. He's had a good season. He had a really good year last year. He'd probably be fine next year.
Giving up a lot of assets for a guy that doesn't fit the future team. I think that there is... less merit here. Okay, welcome to Pinder and Steinberg. We're underway in hour number two. We're in our Basement Systems downtown studio. As of right now, it's February 13th, 11 days from the trade deadline.
Yep.
I don't believe the Flames should be buying. And you can tell me all. It's funny because our good buddy Robert was, I think they should be. I want to see them
really?
Win too. Oh, I was shocked by it, but he gave. I don't agree with him, but he gave good reasoning that. I want them to win two playoff rounds.
That Robert.
Wow. I think winning two playoff rounds would be big for this team, and it would be big for them to learn how to win. This is the year to go do it. I don't agree. I do not at this point, unless something... I'll give them this. The last two games before last night were good. If they play well tonight and for the better part of the next six games, regardless of the win-loss record, but just show me that this process. Can be a team that can control possession and control chances, work hard, play urgent. If they do that for five of the next six games and you take into account the prior two, then maybe I'm a little more convinced that buying makes sense. Right. If it continues to be this 500 hockey team that we've seen since after Christmas, they're 9-8-1 since December 27th when they shellacked the Oilers. Like, they're a 500 average hockey team, and that's exactly what they've shown us. So if that continues, I don't think buying makes any sense. This is not the year to push chips in on a cup run.
And for all the positivity after those two wins, 6-2 variety, 2-over, I mean, it's surrounded by four losses. They've lost four of their last six. So while those two games were nice, they haven't undone the three-game skid that was in front of them, and you followed up those two games with a loss to the worst team in the West.
As of right now, somebody has texted in this, and this is kind of where I'm leaning right now. Do the Blues model, trade who you aren't keeping, but stay competitive. I don't think that is crazy 11 days from the trade deadline.
Okay, philosophically, it's not crazy. Do you think Brad Treliving can call the people above him in the organization and make that happen?
I don't know.
Are you worried about that? I am.
Yes, I am. I am. I would say that I am skeptical that would be given
So while it's a good idea, it's not really something that we know can happen in the real world.
You could sell it with, well, I bet you the bottom line difference, if you're trading away the millions on one of those guys to what you'd make in a
playoff game,
you might be able to convince it that way. Maybe not.
If it's just the bottom line that matters.
But if you can convince somebody that, well, getting Giordano back, and maybe it's Hamonic. What if the Winnipeg Jets come knocking on the door? We need a right shot defenseman bad.
And they do.
Travis Hamonic is from the area. We are willing to give you a first-round pick and a prospect
for Travis
Hamonic.
And they've got an inkling that he wants to come home. They might be able to extend him and get a conditional pick thrown in.
Exactly. If the Jets come knocking on the door, do you make that deal if you're the Flames? I think they should, and I wonder if Brad Treliving could sell that to the powers that be and say, look, I don't think that this is going to drastically change what happens in the playoffs if we make this move. We can still stay competitive. We can still potentially make it, but we can also help our team in the big picture. That's what I wonder isn't the best route from a hockey perspective to go. Whether or not that would be given the okay, it's a fair question to ask because I don't know the answer.
We got Who Says No in 3 o'clock hour, and I've got one sale and one purchase from the Flames at the deadline.
Okay.
So, you know, if they soil themselves the next 10 days, you probably best be recouping some assets.
But even if they don't, like, what if they got six games? What if they go 3-2-1?
Well, and that's the worst. That's the worst.
They're very 3-2-1 would play right into what we've seen from them since post-Christmas.
100%.
They have been an average
and it's hard
to
sell at that point.
Team.
Hard to sell.
There's a 5-game win streak in this stretch. They have been mediocre to average since the Christmas break came to an end. They have been, I would suggest, well below average since the All-Star break comes to an end.
Again.
Even during the 5-game win streak, there was one game that I came away from them saying, yeah, that was a hell of an effort. That was the game January 11th against the Edmonton Oilers
in
where
Edmonton?
They deserved 2 points. No, that was the Cassian Kachuk
night.
Yes,
the return visit with the power play at the end and the 2 points. Thank you, Zach.
Exactly.
And yet, everything you've said, I agree with you. Which team would the Calgary Flames line up with in round one or round two from the Pacific, where you just say they're screwed, they can't win that?
None of them. I just
and so
don't,
this is the great.
I
this
know.
Is the grub. This is the double edged sword.
And that's exactly
and that's what
you would imagine.
Such
is
a
being,
weird spot.
That's exactly what the conversation. Yeah. Like you're playing the role of Murray Edwards right there. Maybe I'm playing the role of Brad Treliving. Like I don't think like intellectually honest about my team.
Not good enough to make the playoffs in the East.
I don't think that we're going to win a Stanley Cup. I think that we might be able to win a round or two in a wide-open Pacific division, but that's no guarantee. I don't think this is the year to push chips in. Your rebuttal would be, I'm the owner. We could win two playoff rounds. That could be anywhere between 6 and 8. No, more than that. That could be anywhere between like 9 and 12 home playoff dates for us.
Yep.
You're pushing chips all in.
Well,
I don't care.
That could be $20 to $40 million. Who knows, right? Never mind all the renewals for next year. The lifeblood of these franchises, season ticket renewal. How do you renew season tickets? Well, you go to the playoffs and you say, we'll let you get in the building, but you got to commit to seasons next year. Making the playoffs is so crucial to the business model of these owners, not to make money, because with essentially the split they've got now of revenue with the players, they're guaranteed as a collective to make money. But to really have a good year on the bottom line, you need playoff revenue. So if I'm Murray Edwards, I'm saying, look, if you think we got a 25% chance of coming out of the Pacific in the postseason and being in the third round, an extra 20 to 30, whatever million, like 2 million a home game, 10 games, I'm not saying no to the chance of 20 million. First rounder, whatever. We can recoup it next year if it doesn't work. Like, I'm not suggesting that's realistic, but if money talks, the threat of making $20 million is a loud bleeping statement.
This is why it's a really fascinating conversation, because it's not like Murray Edwards is going to call us up and be like, okay, gents, here is what my mandate is.
Well, first off, have we heard him speak publicly in 10 years?
Last time I remember Murray Edwards,
the city's buying half a rink from him. We never even saw him at a ribbon cutting or a handshake. So like we haven't heard from him.
I'm trying to think the last time we heard from him. Rob Kerr interviewed him, I want to say about a less than a decade ago.
Less than a decade?
Yeah, it was the last time I remember hearing from Murray Edwards.
So that's his right. He owns a team. He gets to be public or not public. You can be Mark Cuban or you can be as nameless as the San Jose Sharks owners, who I bet you couldn't even name.
Couldn't tell you.
Right? So you can pick your spot. That's the privilege of being in this club. But I guess what comes with being dead silent publicly is that we can question your motives and really not sure what you're about, whether it's winning, whether it's about making money, whether you're interested in keeping the team forever, whether you want to sell the team. You know, he lives in the UK. No, he doesn't, clearly. If that was a priority, letting people know
what
he's thinking.
But what I mean by that is, like, if you're the guy, like, this is what I've always said. Like, we can criticize owners, but I kind of feel it's a little strange because, like, okay, I can criticize, well, you don't put enough emphasis on winning. Well, okay, if I don't put I'll sell the team, then he might not have one. Like, it's such a bizarre thing because the Flames don't exist if Murray Edwards doesn't own them right now.
I entirely disagree.
Well, I'll say
this.
This
is a top 10 hockey market on planet Earth.
He certainly helped save this team when things were not as flush financially.
Sure.
So my point is, I'm not trying to defend anybody. My point is that as an owner, you're the one writing the checks. You're the one determining whether or not you're selling or not. If you are fine with your profit margin and you bought this team, then it's your right to do whatever the heck you want
100%.
With it. And I guess we can criticize about, well, you know, you're not spending your hundreds of millions of dollars the way we'd like you to spend your hundreds of millions of dollars, or you're putting too much emphasis on. It's just like we have no control over it. We can criticize or be frustrated all we want, and I'm with you. Like, it. I look at some organizations in the NHL. I look at Pittsburgh. I'm looking at even the example I gave on the text line about St. Louis. St. Louis was given the carte blanche. Doug Armstrong was given the keys to, okay, yeah, you can trade off some pieces and we'll try to stay competitive and it might not be best for us this playoff run and it might maybe cost us some home playoff dates, yeah. But we're okay with you doing that. Like, I think that is the best type of ownership group to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, but we just will never know what we have in an ownership group here because they've never made statements about what they stand for. That's all I'm saying is that if anyone thinks this criticism is unfair, I mean, all they have to do is tell us what's a priority.
Yeah.
Because the GM's always going to say it's winning, and the GM's never going to put the heat on his owner.
Well, why would he?
It'd be idiotic.
The hand that feeds.
Yeah. I mean, only at this station, do you make fun of the boss? Nowhere else on earth do you make fun of the boss. That's the guy that hires and fires
you.
You
make fun of the boss?
Make fun of it, probably.
Yeah.
But they're just accurate depictions. I didn't think he was making
improving his brand. Hockey Central at noon. Ratings are up.
But I mean, I've got to say...
You're welcome.
Francisco Aquilini has never really come out and said exactly what the mandate is.
No, but you understand that, like, he speaks at big moments. He's
my point on
very,
that, though, is...
Like, you understand where his opinion is and what he wants to do.
You rip on Jim Benning all the time, and fair enough. If you were to judge Benning just on his moves, you're like, oh, those are kind of...
Yeah, $6 million a year for fourth-line players. Okay.
But if Aquilini's saying, hey, Jim, I'm your boss, go out and be aggressive in free agency, I want this team to be a playoff team this year. I don't care if that's not good for our long-term plan. Screw a long-term plan. We only have a short-term plan. If you're Jim Benning, what do? You either quit or you do the job that is assigned to you.
You quit like Trevor Linden. But that's fine. So again, my point is, it's just weird to have these conversations where we don't even know if Brad Treliving's allowed to sell. Isn't that weird? Like, there's a lot of organizations where you know that the people they've hired to do the hockey stuff, they're allowed to make the hockey decisions. This market, for decades, we've had no clarity and a whole lot of question marks. Hey, why did the Jason Zucker deal fall apart? Hey, do you think that no one actually tried to trade Jerome before it actually went down when his value was shot? Like, there's a lot of questions about what they're in it for and who's calling the shots. And there aren't questions around other organizations. That's the only point I'm making. And if you're going to be dead silent on who's got all the say and the chips and whether, you know, your job's on the line or not, then I guess that's what the discussion can turn into.
And I have heard suggestions that we got to take a break because we got Kale coming up. But I've heard the suggestions that, well, the only way that Treliving signed the extension was if he had the autonomy to make whatever moves he want. I've heard that, but I've also heard that's not the case. And nobody knows because they're not going to tell us. I don't expect them to tell us. They have no obligation to tell us.
And to be fair, their track record
doesn't leave open these conversations.
And their track record isn't, they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt because there's been so many deals that have apparently fallen apart, even though the GM signed off.